It's snowing in Washington, D.C., but that has not deterred people lined up since last Thursday to hear the two cases scheduled this week involving gay marriage. One is a challenge to California's voter-passed initiative Proposition 8, which bans gay marriage. And Edith Windsor filed the other suit before the Supreme Court, challenging the part of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act that denies federal benefits to same-sex couples. Edith was legally married but had to pay taxes on her wife's estate when she died. Let's get a primer first. Emily Bazelon is senior editor at Slate. Emily, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Big deal, you say. Historic, blockbusting.
Yes, I agree with all of those things. You know, this argument over gay marriage is playing out in the public opinion polls with a really dramatic shift. We saw last week a rise to 58% support for gay marriage across the country. And the question is, where are the justices in all that movement?
Well, let's dive into the cases as well. Start with the case that involves DOMA. This is United States versus Windsor. Edie Windsor, as we said, contesting estate taxes. Explain.
She is a widow in her 80s, and her spouse, Thea Speier, left her with a substantial estate. And if Edie Windsor had been married to a man instead of a woman, she would have been relieved of inheritance taxes, a federal burden of more than $360,000.
And by the way, they were married legally in Canada, and they lived in New York, where their marriage was recognized.
Exactly. And so the argument in this case is a relatively moderate, small-step argument. It is that in states that recognize gay marriage as legal, the federal law should follow the state law. And that is at odds with a provision of the Defense of Marriage Act that says that the federal government will not recognize gay marriage anywhere.
Edie Windsor spoke with Nina Totenberg this month. Let's listen to a little of that, talking about what being married legally meant to her.
The fact is, you know, marriage is this magic thing. I mean, forget all the financial stuff. I mean, wherever you go, if you're married, that means something to people.
So, Emily Bazelon, Edie Windsor makes a compelling case for how she felt in her legal in Canada and New York and several other states' marriage. But the part of the DOMA, the federal law that her case challenges, is just the one that means that she had to pay these taxes, over $300,000. She's not challenging DOMA.
Exactly. The part of DOMA she is challenging is the part that says that the federal government will not grant any benefits. So veterans' benefits, spousal benefits, all the things that come to you when you get married under federal law, gay couples are denied. And this suit is about whether in states that recognize gay marriage, those gay couples should be treated according to state law at odds with DOMA.
There's over 1,000 of these benefits. So a couple questions. First of all, we thought the Obama administration took a stand that they didn't want the Justice Department to defend DOMA. So who is going to be arguing against Edie Windsor in the Supreme Court?
That's a very interesting question. It has a couple of different answers. The Justice Department, you're right, they are going to argue against the constitutionality of the law. There is a question, though, about whether they're properly in the case. But they're going to say that they still have standing as a party. They still belong there because they're still enforcing the law. It's confusing.
Yeah.
Alongside them, or really in opposition to them, will be a group called the Bipartisan Legal Action Group, which is really the House Republicans. And they have hired superstar lawyer Paul Clement to argue in favor of the constitutionality of the Defense of Marriage Act. So this group is truly the defender of this federal law. There's also, however, a question about whether they are properly before the court.
And so ultimately, what do you think is going to happen?
I think that the court is going to get itself past these questions about whether the proper parties are before it and rule on the merits and rule against the Defense of Marriage Act in this particular context. So in states like New York that recognize gay marriage, I think we're very likely to have the court say, you know what, Congress has to go with the law in these states. That's usually a conservative position, right, that we're going to let the states make their own laws. What was smart about the way that the gay rights movement set up this case is that it aligns the gay rights cause with federalism, with the power of the states.
Okay, so on Wednesday, United States versus Windsor will be argued before the Supreme Court. Very important case on Wednesday, but the big one is considered to be Hollingsworth v. Perry. That's tomorrow. This is the debate over California's Prop 8, which was a voter-supported initiative that banned gay marriage. Remind us again about the complicated case and history and strange bedfellows.
Before this ban on gay marriage passed, the California Supreme Court declared gay marriage legal in California, and more than 20,000 couples got married over that summer. Then the voters passed this ban. And so the question in this case is whether, in these circumstances in which the state granted a right to gay marriage and then took it away, whether it is constitutional for California to ban gay marriage.
Are they just deciding what California can do, or are they going broader?
The Supreme Court has exactly that choice in front of it. The court could rule that this ban on gay marriage is only unconstitutional in California, because California is the only state that let gay couples get married and then took that right away. Another choice would be to say that states cannot grant all the rights of marriage, in other words, civil unions, but then not call this institution marriage.
California does have civil unions. So explain further how that might enter into the Supreme Court's decision.
Well, one possibility is the court could say that the constitutional deficiency with banning gay marriage, the problem here, is that you're allowing all the rights and benefits of marriage without calling it marriage. That's why we're striking down the ban. If you're going to grant all the rights and benefits of marriage, you have to call it marriage. And if that's what the justices choose, then the ruling would apply, presumably, in California, but also in the 8 other states. I think it's a weird legal answer to the question. It essentially penalizes the states that have granted civil unions and leaves alone all the states that have granted no rights to gay marriage at all. Mm. It just seems like an odd solution legally to me, although politically it has some legs because it would only affect states that are fairly in support of gay marriage, as opposed to the big regions of the country in which the polls really don't show solid support. The third option is the huge elephant in the room, which I think is unlikely but possible, and that would be that the majority of the Supreme Court would say that gay marriage bans are unconstitutional all across the country, in effect legalizing gay marriage in 41 states that have not voted or had a court ruling in favor of that on their own.
Okay, what do you think is the likelihood?
I think the California only ruling is the one that is both most plausible, it has the best legal support, and probably the wisest choice, in that it wouldn't force all of the 41 states that have not found themselves ready for gay marriage to take that step. Now, I also think there is a very strong constitutional argument that these bans are unconstitutional nationwide. But I wonder about the wisdom of making that huge step through the courts.
Well, you are reflecting a fear that totally legalizing gay marriage through the Supreme Court rather than through state laws could provoke the same kind of backlash Roe v. Wade did. We're going to hear more about that a little later. And by the way, we're speaking with Slate's Emily Bazelon. She's giving us a primer on the 2 gay marriage cases before the Supreme Court this week. And Emily, staying with states, it would seem both cases claim states' rights, but to different ends. New York is saying its citizens who are legally married have the right to federal benefits. But couldn't foes of gay marriage say that Californians have a right to overturn law through referendum?
Well, you're right. The inconsistency or the biggest problem for gay rights advocates in these cases, the New York case does a fabulous job of lining up gay rights and states' rights, 2 of Justice Anthony Kennedy's favorite things, and he is surely the swing vote in these cases. Whereas the California case in some ways pits the states' rights voter initiative, this ban, versus the rights of gay couples to get married. And I think that's why it's a trickier case for the court and a bigger risk for the movement.
Well, and then the idea that the Supreme Court might come up with a complete ban on bans on gay marriage. Do you think that that is possible with this court?
I think it's possible. I mean, I think it's really in the hands of Justice Kennedy. And one of the big questions here is whether the court will say that the standard for judging these bans is what's called heightened scrutiny. And that means that because we're discriminating against a particular group of people who have a history of being discriminated against, we're going to look harder at what the justification is for denying them a particular right. That would be a big deal. And I think if you use the heightened scrutiny, it becomes just impossible to justify banning gay marriage, because if the social science underlying it has all moved in that direction. For example, opponents of gay marriage used to say, well, kids are just worse off raised in gay households. We now know from many studies that that is not true.
In fact, just one last week.
Exactly. And so I think if you have any kind of heightened scrutiny in looking at the justification for these bans, they fall apart.
So what do you think the arguments are going to be in defense of California's Prop 8?
That is such a great question, because at the trial that we had a couple of years ago, the main lawyer defending Prop 8 famously came up with no reason.
Let's remind people of that exchange. The defender, again, of Prop 8, the ban on same-sex marriage, was asked by the court, what harm would this do? Because, you know, there has to be reasonable sense of a harm to society by having gay marriage. And he said what?
He said, I don't know.
Several times. I don't exactly. know. I don't know.
So I think really what you're left here with, frankly, is tradition and a rather theoretical idea that somehow gay people getting married is going to dissuade heterosexual couples from getting married. You know, underlying a lot of the honest opposition to gay marriage are religious beliefs, and they're deeply held and personal. But that is not a constitutional justification the government can give for treating one group of people differently from another group.
What about the fact that voters voted for it? Now, the argument is always made that, you know, if voters had been asked to vote on civil rights issues in the past, they would have overturned things like voting rights for blacks.
The defenders of this ban will certainly argue that if you're thinking about direct democracy, it's important to defer to the voters in this case. And the answer to that will be, well, we're talking about civil rights. And one of the things that courts absolutely have the job of doing is making sure that the majority does not discriminate against minority groups.
Republican leaders have filed a brief, corporate CEOs arguing for gay marriage. In the case of corporate CEOs, saying it's good for business. Do those have an impact?
I think those briefs are really important because they show that support for gay marriage has become extremely mainstream. There's a truism about the court that I like, which is that the justices aren't supposed to pay attention to the weather, but they do care about the climate. And what we're seeing here is this amazingly rapid shift of support towards supporting gay marriage. There are all these ways in which Justice Kennedy is starting to have allies, Republicans, he's a Republican-appointed justice, who agree with him on this. And I think all of that makes it easier for the court to take a step in favor of gay marriage.
On the other hand, what might be the powerful forces arguing for a ban on gay marriage in California?
Justices like Antonin Scalia have made it clear that they think that homosexuality is immoral for religious and personal reasons, legal reasons as well, and that they think states have the power to prohibit immoral conduct. And so that is still a deep-seated belief among some of the justices. The question is whether it is only two or three or four of them as opposed to five, the magic number on the court.
Emily Bazelon, legal affairs editor at Slate, going to be all over the Supreme Court hearings this week, as she also, by the way, is still keeping an eye on the important issue of bullying. Her book, Sticks and Stones, and we'll link you to our conversation with her about that at hereandnow.org. Emily, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And as I said, up next, we'll hear how some gay marriage backers are pointing to the backlash after Roe v. Wade as reason for the court to go slow this week. That's in a minute, Here and Now.